future Mustangs. Welcome to the Beyond the Nuts and Bolts podcast with me, your happy-go-lucky Irish host, Phil Hawley. In today's podcast called Clubs, Teams and Groups, I'm joined by my incredible guest, Omar Saeed, a fifth-year integrated engineering student and our illustrious Undergraduate Engineering Society president. Together, we'll delve into his journey within Western engineering, starting with what initially drew him to the faculty, be it the program, the vibrant community, or his passion for engineering. We discussed his involvement in various clubs, teams, mentorship programs, and leadership opportunities, highlighting how these experiences have shaped his leadership skills, boosted his confidence, and fostered a strong connection to the Western engineering community. Omar also shares what inspired him to run for UES president. Finally, we'll explore his goals as he sets out on his journey or has been very much involved in his journey as the UES president, the initiatives he has led on, and the positive changes he's championed within our community. But before we delve into that, I have a quick shout out to today's sponsor. Today's sponsor is the Windy Research Institute, which was established in 2011. Windy Research Institute was created to take advantage of the groundbreaking opportunities in wind research at Western. Thanks to the world's first three-dimensional wind testing chamber in the Windy Research Facility, their work fosters innovative research and collaboration both nationally and internationally. The Windy Research Institute focuses on three key areas. Those are wind engineering, energy, and environment. Some of their main research topics include the effects of non-synoptic wind systems like tornadoes and downbursts on buildings and structures, optimizing wind farms and turbines for efficiency, modeling airflow over rough surfaces, urban areas, complete landscapes and forests, studying outdoor and indoor air quality, and examining wind-driven rain and snow. They also explore topics related to risk analysis, power grid operations, policy making, economics, and decision-making models. A big thanks once again to the Windy Research Institute for supporting today's episode. Omar, welcome to the Beyond the Nuts and Bolts podcast. It is an absolute pleasure to have you with us today. For listeners' sake, I was wondering if you could share your journey with Western Engineering and what inspired you to take on the role of the Undergraduate Engineering Society president.
Thanks, Phil. I'm happy to be here. So I guess if you want the kind of resume rundown of my journey here, my first year was 2020, so it was kind of a crappy COVID year. I did actually run to be a year rep in for the UES, but I was unsuccessful in that. But then in my second year, I became the charity commissioner, so I got hired on there. Got to plan a lot of really fun events like Charity on the Rocks, which is kind of exciting because we got to bring back some events after COVID. The year after that, I kept my charity commissioner role, but also became a USC counselor. So that's the University Student Council. So that meant I go to both the UES and the USC meetings. I get to sit on both councils and I hold one of the three votes for engineering on the USC, which was really cool. Got to kind of see a big Western perspective there of kind of inter-faculty stuff. Then my fourth year was my internship year. So I was kind of away from school on internship then. I still held an internship rep position on the UES. And then I also held a position on the Engineering Students Society's Council of Ontario, which is actually a provincial organization. And I was their VP advocacy then. And kind of at the end of that year, I decided that I want to kind of focus on the UES a little bit more and hold a position there. And, you know, after speaking to some people, I thought, you know, I could probably do this president thing, gave it a go and decided to run for it. But yeah.
It's absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for sharing. And wow, you have done a lot since coming to Western Engineering. So just out of interest, this isn't something that I necessarily planned to discuss today, but I guess what did that process look like of actually, for those who are listening, who are in high school, what did that process of becoming the UES president, you know, Some people might think, oh, you know, Omar is the big name on campus. Maybe you are. But my question is, what does that process actually look like to become US Prez?
Yeah, so if you really want to get in the weeds of it, the bylaws are on our website. You can read it there. That's kind of the technical thing. But really what I'd say is the main kind of factor that we take into account is experience. So there is actually a requirement for you to have sat on council for, I believe it's at least one term previously. So you've kind of need to have a position on the UES before you can run for UES president. And I believe we also have the stipulation that you need to be in your third year or higher specifically for the president role. But we have a ton of roles. So we have our kind of executive positions, we have our year reps. So every single year and discipline has a representative that sits on the UES council. We have those USC commissioners that I mentioned earlier, and I know kind of the audience of this podcast is mainly incoming students. We have actually six or eight first-year reps. We're kind of still finalizing that number for next year. So there's lots of opportunities for first years to get involved. A kind of different way to get involved is one of our officer positions. So that charity commissioner that I mentioned earlier, we have all these roles that are hired on, not elected. And these are kind of fulfilling functions of the organization. So we have a social media team, yearbook team, things like that. So that's another really great way, especially for students in their younger years, to kind of get involved with the organization.
So for our listeners, for you and for you in particular, what does being part of a club, team or group mean to you? And how has it personally enhanced your experience as a student here at Western Engineering? And very glad to be sitting across the table with someone who has undoubtedly a plethora of things to pull from.
Yeah, so I think really the biggest thing is clubs are the best way to make friends, honestly. Some of my best friends I've gotten to know through my experience on clubs and through my work with Western Housing. That's kind of where all my friends come from. And it's just a place that you gather where, you know, you have a common interest, you have a common goal. Like some of the build teams I've been on, like WECA before, you know, you've got that that goal that you're trying to reach and you're kind of working all year together. You're obviously spending a lot of time with each other. So it just naturally forms those friendships. But also it's really important for kind of developing those leadership skills. I would never suggest someone, you know, do nothing and then try to become something like a president or an executive. You have to kind of start those roles earlier on and develop those leadership skills. And thankfully, Western has one of the best club environments, both just for Eng and across the university, that I've ever seen. There's lots of ways to get involved. And that's really developed my leadership skills and my teamwork skills, which are the soft skills that I think are really important, especially since you don't necessarily get them in the classroom during an engineering education.
That's amazing. That's super, super cool. One of the things I always like to tell prospective students is that although we in engineering offer one of the most academically rigorous programs, or arguably one of the most academically rigorous programs on campus, that we also have one of the most actively engaged student bodies on campus, which is again testament to the terrific students that we have here in Western Engineering. I also say that with, hopefully you would agree as a listener, a level of credibility, having worked for institutions around the world. There is definitely something particularly special when it comes to our Western Engineering students, for sure. So you've clearly been involved in a lot of initiatives and projects. For listeners, I was wondering if you could speak to some of the most impactful initiatives or projects you've worked on as part of your leadership within the Undergraduate Engineering Society.
Yeah, so one of my favorite things that I've done, so I kind of mentioned earlier ESCO, or the Engineering Society's Council of Ontario. There's an equivalent organization nationally called the Canadian Federation of Engineering Students. And through them, the CFES, I was able to run a conference on diversity in engineering. So last year I was the chair for that. I hosted it here at Western with a team of about 25 students. From Western, we hosted a weekend-long conference focusing on diversity in engineering. We got to get speakers from all around the world. We had some fly in from London, England, you know, the real London. That was a really, really unique experience. It was really cool to kind of spend a year on a weekend-long project. We had over 130 students fly in from 40 schools across Canada and kind of got to meet a lot of people from engineering schools all around the country. So that was a really unique experience. I would say my time with ESCO as its VP advocacy as well was really impactful. I got to go to Queen's Park and actually talk to members of provincial parliament They're about advocating for student issues. And really the way that I kind of see every student organization's role in the world having two pillars, that being advocacy and kind of improving life. So that be wellness or social or however you see it. And so that advocacy pillar is really the one that I've kind of focused my career, if you want to call it that, on the most. And that's kind of the one that I see the best. And specifically with the UES, it's advocating with the faculty to, you know, make things more accessible, advocating for student issues that may pop up in, you know, certain classes or with certain professors or things like that, having that kind of leverage to talk to the faculty and try to improve the already great student experience here. But, you know, you can always make things better. And that's kind of what we're there for.
That's amazing. I feel like I'm amazed at every response. Going back to one of the things you said about that conference that you ran, was there like something in particular that you left with that really has stuck with you? Maybe it was something someone said, maybe it was just like, you know, a sense or a vibe to the vibe checkers out there. What were one of the things that stood out to you?
Yeah, I think one of the really cool things that we kind of tried to showcase during that conference was alternate career paths within engineering and what that could look like. So, you know, most people have a very rigid structure of what an engineer looks like or what the type of work that an engineer does. But a big focus of the conference was engineering for social change or engineering for good. So that be, you know, initiatives in other countries to kind of improve their infrastructure. One of the really cool ones that we had was a member of parliament, Omar Al-Gabra, actually came. He was a former transportation minister of the current government. And he came in and he was an engineer, went to engineering school, worked in engineering, you know, consulting for a number of years, and then decided to run for national parliament. And so that having that voice at the table in your federal parliament, who's an engineer, who kind of can speak to the bridges and the trains and the other things that the federal government funds, is a really unique place to have an engineer, and we don't have enough of them up there. So that was kind of one of the things that we tried to do with the conference that was really cool, was highlighting kind of non-standard engineering pathways and how many things you can do with this really versatile degree.
Yeah, I think that's an incredible point to touch on, that, you know, the diversity that's offered even within the, you know, different programs that we offer, but also the different streams and different tangents that you can take within them. So one of the things that you mentioned earlier was you touched upon some of the softer skills that being part of the sort of clubs, groups and teams have helped you personally develop in. But for those listening, you know, how does that actually occur, and what, you know, how do the connections go beyond the ones that you make in your classroom?
Yeah, so I'm gonna not answer your question at first, but I'll get there. To tell you a little story from my co-op, my long-term internship earlier, I was talking to my boss and kind of asking him, you know, what makes you decide to hire an engineer, or like how do you make that choice? And he goes, really, it's whether I like you. Like, do I like speaking to you? Because if I hire you, I'm going to be spending, you know, a lot of time with you, more time than I spend with my family. So are you a pleasant person to be around? Can I hold a conversation with you? Are you a good team player? And again, these are things that you can't really learn in the classroom. These are things that you have to be part of clubs and teams, and especially things like student councils, to kind of develop those skills. So I think that's kind of the biggest place where I've grown, is, you know, project management experience, public speaking experience, learning how to juggle multiple complex tasks while also doing, you know, a full engineering workload. The people skills are really the thing that a lot of engineers I find are missing in the workplace. And that's really the best place to develop them. So, you know, being able to provide, you know, constructive criticism or being able to work as part of a team, I think these are really important skills that being on clubs and teams helps you develop.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely crucial. You know, that, yeah, to your point, that you're often looking for those people that you enjoy working with. You know, most people can showcase what they can do on a piece of paper, but, you know, it's a different story when you're asked to communicate that. So that's incredible. And also, you know, in the likes of a variety of fields, you know, funding would also become dependent on your ability to translate those ideas and become a very good storyteller. So, yeah, that's awesome. So the way I like to understand the US, and feel free to correct me if this is wrong, is essentially I see the US as, you know, almost like elevating the student's voice at, you know, are individuals who have an important seat at the table where the student voice needs to be heard. But in terms of like the clubs, groups, and teams, as the US president, what does your involvement with those clubs, groups, and teams actually look like?
Yeah, so to kind of specify, there's over 400 clubs or something like that at Western. And the majority of those clubs are kind of overseen by the university student council. So that's the student council that looks over the entire university. Engineering is a little unique in that we have our own club ecosystem, and ours is pretty complex actually. But we have 35 clubs and teams-ish. That number changes every year. But 35 was the last time I counted, that fall directly under the UES and engineering as a whole. And those are kind of split into three groups. So we have our build teams. So those are teams that build things. And so, you know, you might have heard of our Formula One team or WECA, which I mentioned earlier. That's the Western Engineering Concrete Canoe Association. So we build a canoe out of concrete and race that. So we have all these different teams that usually have challenges that are multidisciplinary in nature, and they compete at some sort of competition. So that's type one. Type two, we call them kind of special focus clubs or special interest clubs. So these are usually clubs that are kind of collecting people that are interested in something through an engineering lens. So an example of this would be our Women in Engineering chapter or our EngiQueers chapter. We also have things like the Engineering Musical or other kind of just interest-based clubs that are really neat that way. And then the third kind of type is discipline clubs. So each discipline, be it integrated, mechanical, civil, each one has its kind of own club and association. And so what those do is kind of, A, provide a really wide variety of clubs and teams for students to enjoy. And it also kind of lets you specialize what you're kind of the most interested in. To answer your question more directly of what's the UES's involvement in that, is we hold the coin strap or the purse strap, sorry. So there's a student fund called the Undergraduate Engineering Donation Fund. So every student donates $80 towards this fund, and it's an optional donation, but about 90% of our students choose to donate it, which is fantastic. And that fund gets pulled together. It's usually a couple $100,000 by the time it all gets collected. And that gets distributed mainly by UES executives. So it's myself, the president, VP finance, and our VP internal, who kind of looks after the clubs and teams more specifically. And then we have a clubs commission that's kind of like a joint partnership between the UES and the clubs and teams. So all the clubs and teams sit on this clubs commission, and we make decisions about how this money is going to be dispersed and things like that through that commission and through committees on that commission. So mainly the money is what we look after, but also things like student space. You know, with the new engineering building coming up, we had a big part in that clubs and team space. You know, we approve and ratify new clubs. So if somebody wants to start a new club, we're kind of the ones that they go to first. And then the faculty does kind of rubber stamp it, but we're kind of the main gateway for that. And then also just support with spaces and planning events. So if they need to work with somebody external to Western, a lot of the times they'll do that through us. Or if they need to, they need some equipment. The UES has a lot of equipment available for clubs and teams to borrow and use, spaces, things like that. So that's kind of the main ways that we help out clubs and teams.
That's wonderful. I'm going to ask you to indulge me once again with a question, because it's something that I get asked quite a lot. Which is somewhat surprising, but maybe not surprising, because it's an interesting talking point. So as you mentioned WECA a number of times, and I've heard a myriad of ideas on how you get a concrete canoe to float, because those two things do not go hand in hand, or at least in my world. Maybe they do in an engineer's, but in its most simplistic and basic form, how do you get a concrete canoe to float?
Yeah, I don't want to give all the secrets away, because it is a competition and other schools won't get a hold of this. But really, the main thing is the weight of your boat has to weigh less than its displaced mass in water, right? So you have to make the concrete pretty thin, usually. That's kind of one of the steps. But you have to make your boat strong enough to hold the people in it and keep its shape. So, you know, you use enough concrete to make it strong, but not too much that it's too heavy. And there's some other filler materials. I won't say exactly what we use, but there's some other materials that are allowed to be used in the boat. And the competition has some pretty kind of strict rules about what you can and can't do. But a lot of it's just design, testing, and really, you know, engineering the problem and thinking hard about how to kind of fit those constraints that you're put in.
And then another question based on one of the things that you raised, and again, intrigued me in hearing it. So the US hold the purse strings as it pertains to the $80 that every, well, 90% of students contribute to that fund. So I'm assuming, which is a dangerous thing to do in life, which is in part why I'm asking the question, but am I right in thinking logically then you then disperse that money amongst the teams? And if that is the case, how do you determine who gets how much? And yeah, what's that based on?
Yeah, this is a really spicy topic. It's something that a lot of people get mad at us every year for, because, you know, no matter what you do, it's more money is requested than we have money to give. And so you can't make everyone happy. We've actually been kind of working on that application for a number of years to make it more fair. So a couple of years ago, and I was kind of involved in the development of this a little, we introduced a rubric for clubs and teams to kind of make it transparent. So every year around the beginning of the year, they give us an application. So we have 10 questions. They're available on the website if you want to see exactly what they are. But basically, it's what does your budget look like? How much is that of that is from sponsorship versus from this donation fund versus club and club member fees and merch sales, things like that. So clubs have a variety of ways to get money. So we're kind of looking at, are you solely relying on donation fund, or do you have a healthy mix of sources? How big is your club? How many members is your club? How many disciplines does it span? What is the average year of people in your club? Are you attracting first and second years, or is this only a fourth year club? Why is it only that, right? We want our clubs to be as inclusive as possible. Recently we've added EDI questions about specifically what initiatives are you having to make your club more inclusive. But really the big thing that we look at is, why do you need the money? Like, what are you planning on doing with it? What do you want to buy? Is this a 1 year purchase or things like that? And we have a committee. So those three types of clubs that I described earlier, we have a representative from each type of club that's kind of elected to sit on that committee. And then four members of the UES executive, that also sits on the committee, and through us and some faculty, advising, they kind of, we distribute the money that way. The faculty doesn't get a vote, but we do have them there just for historical context, and because they've been around longer than we have. Yeah.
One of the things that you touched upon earlier, which I thought was interesting, was that, although it's ultimately, you know, voted for or approved at the faculty level, if someone wants to start a club, team or group, and when they come to Western engineering, what is the process for doing that? So when I was at university, I did not go to Western university. I studied in England, in the UK. But when I was at that university, I was the running president of my university, and I actually set up that society. It's still going to this day, which I'm very proud of. But yeah, what is that process?
Yeah, so we have new clubs start all the time. I think we've had two or three start up this year, which is really cool. Basically what you need is some sort of interest form, or to show us that this is a club that students are interested in. So a lot of time people will send out like a Google form or something and say, you know, sign up here if you want to see X club happen. And then you do a bit of a written application to our, it's nothing super lengthy, just kind of explaining what the club is, why you want to do it, why you see that there's a need for it, how it doesn't, you know, step over the toes of another pre-existing club. You send that to our VP internal. So our VP internal kind of handles most of our clubs and teams. That's primarily their role. And they'll kind of work with the club to develop their proposal. Usually the clubs will do a bit of a presentation to council. So council must ratify clubs first. They go through council. Then after council approves of a club, it goes through the clubs commission. The clubs commission kind of gives it that final stamp so it can join the club commission. Once it's through there, it just goes to the faculty for final review. And then it officially becomes a Western Engineering Club. Then they figure out all their stuff with finance and accounting once that gets set up. But usually it's a pretty smooth process after that.
So one of the questions I had for you was, one of the things that we say here in Western Engineering is that Western Engineering is a team sport. And so along, other than the incredible work that you do, what resources are available to help students succeed? And so I think that for me, when I went to university, was certainly like something that I had to transition to, where I feel like I was immersed in an environment who was tangibly working towards my success. And, you know, it's in no one's benefit for a student to not be successful during their time at a university. So other than the stuff you mentioned, what supports are available to those students?
Yeah, so I guess starting with kind of supports directly from the UES, we have our incredible soft team, which doesn't technically fall under us, but we do a lot of work with them. So they kind of support you right out the gate as a first year through orientation and throughout the year. So they do a lot of review sessions, study sessions. Each and every single incoming first year will have a soft, like personally assigned to them, that can guide them through that first year. We also have our VP academic and our associate VP academics, which could kind of take concerns usually that are channeled up through your representative. So you go to your rep with any kind of concerns or issues that you're having. And that gets funneled up through us, and we'll have conversations with the faculty kind of on your behalf that way to advocate for any student needs. Then going to the university itself support. So within the Faculty of Engineering, there's a ton of supports that we've advocated for and received, such as the Wellness Counselor, which I found incredibly amazing. They've been at it since my time starting here, and it's been a huge help. We also have our academic advising team that can help you kind of find supports out on campus or help you out with any issues that you're having there. Usually our professors are pretty helpful, honestly. Like they aren't here to see you fail. You go to their office hours. They're usually like the first line of defense that a lot of people will skip over, but like go talk to your professor, see what they say. And then the university centrally also has a lot of kind of help supports out there, both like mental health supports through our health plan that every student gets access to, but also the PAL Learning Center, which is the Peer Assisted Learning Center. That's really good. They have free tutoring for every single first year engineering course. And then also, you know, as you go up through upper years, they have different kind of support groups and study groups that way. And Accessible Education is the last one that I'll give a shout out to. I found them very helpful since my time here.
That's great. I like a good shout out. So good job in shouting out those people. It's good to appreciate those that we have benefited from. And so, you know, as we bring this episode into land, a couple of questions I have for you to finish. And that is, what challenges do you feel? Well, we kind of touched upon some of them. Other than the ones that we've touched upon already, what challenges do clubs, teams, or groups typically face? And how can students overcome them? And then maybe to bring us into land, what has been your favorite thing to advocate for?
Yeah, so the big one is money. that's always a struggle, and it's a huge part of kind of the advocacy that we do. We kind of go to the faculty, we go to different sources looking for money for students, for their clubs and teams mainly. It's not cheap to build, you know, a Formula One car every 2 years, or to build a concrete canoe, despite what it sounds like. It's a pretty expensive endeavor, a lot of travel there. So we kind of work with the faculty to, you know, we have things like the engineering trucks or things like that that make transport costs lower. And then we have a pretty good system of helping clubs and teams develop sponsorship packages to go and find external sponsors. And obviously, we're always trying to find the fairest way to distribute the money that we do have with our funds that we set up. So that's kind of how we support them there. Some other issues that are kind of more relevant to like individual people is time management and kind of being overwhelmed. It's, you know, you've got engineering's probably one of the most densely loaded schedules that you can get here at Western. And then our clubs and teams are often high commitment activities, you know, a lot of things to do. And again, it's a lot of work to build things like a car or other big projects. So we do a lot of development and kind of time managing people's time, making sure that the setup of these clubs and teams is, you know, not putting too much work on one specific person. We really encourage clubs and teams to look over their leadership structures and say, is this working out for us? Is this the right distribution of load for our team? Should we add another position or should we rework this position? So that's something that we always encourage them to take a look at, and something that UES itself has done. Like, we added a new executive position last year specifically for advocacy to kind of take some of that load. And I would say the thing that I've advocated for the most, you know, since my time here is probably accessibility and inclusion. I'm a big proponent of making sure that everyone at Western feels included. We've kind of transitioned away from a lot of our events being, you know, like drinking events or things like that. You know, don't get me wrong, we still have them for those that are of age, and we still have some events like that. But we've also put a big focus on making sure that there are events for those who don't drink, or more chill, relaxing events if people don't want a, you know, high intensity event. So kind of making sure that we have a good mix of events like that. Our Edge versus Ivy, like, hockey and basketball games, you know, kind of more sports focused events. Those are kind of catering to a big crowd that wasn't catered to before. So advocating for those more inclusive initiatives has been a big one for me, both, you know, in the UES and then on the faculty side. Things like the accessible absence policy that was recently passed, that was something that, you know, through my time on the USC and even provincially, I was advocating for with various deans meetings and things like that. So I was happy to see that get passed and have a more flexible absence policy for students. So that was like kind of a big accomplishment for the student leader community here at Western. But also just making our courses themselves within engineering more accessible. So things like flexible deadlines or making sure that faculty is kind of trained properly to deal with those accessible situations has been a big kind of goal of mine.
That is wonderful. So to all our listeners, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I'd like to thank my guest, Omar Saeed, again for joining me today and taking out time from his, as you can tell from listening thus far, is a very, very busy schedule. And be sure to check out more episodes on our YouTube channel. And if you have any thoughts on today's episode or topics that you'd like us to touch upon in the future, feel free to email me at futurewe@uwo.ca. Thanks again, and we will see you next week. Cue that music.